Coming up on this episode of the Leadership Lounge.
Make the decision and go for it. Just do it. I think it's great to connect and build relationship because I believe in relationships too. And I believe it's like, I want to work with people I like. That's what I've learned. Like if I like you and we have good relationship, then I want to work with you forever.
My name is Mitch Slater, Executive Director, UBS New York City, and I'm joined by my colleague, Saman Sami, Account Vice President, Wealth Management from Dallas, Texas. And the best way to contact us is by emailing mitch.slater@ubs.com or saman.sami@ubs.com. Our guest today is not affiliated with UBS. And welcome to the Leadership Lounge with Mitch Slater and Saman Sami, brought to you by UBS. This is the podcast where the world's top business leaders pull back the curtain on their journeys to success, from the highs and lows of entrepreneurship to transformative insights on leadership and growth. We dive deep into the stories that inspire, educate, and challenge the way we think about business. So sit back, relax, and step into the Leadership Lounge where great leaders share their secrets. In today's episode, we had the pleasure to sit down with Dave Westcott, serial entrepreneur and founder and CEO of Evergreen Brands. Dave is also an avid marathon runner, motivational speaker, and husband and father to three amazing kids.
Hey, Dave, thank you so much for taking the time to get on the Leadership Lounge podcast here at UBS. I've had the privilege to get to know you through the CEO Coaching International community, but also gotten to know you personally over the past year or so, someone I look up to. And when I look at your LinkedIn, I see a lot of cool things. I see change your life, change the world, coaching, leadership, health, family, faith, marathons, boxing, hockey. How do you manage to do all this, first of all? Secondly, tell us a little bit about yourself and being the company owner of Evergreen Brands. Just tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, thank you, one, for the compliments. I appreciate it. And, you know, I think it comes down to just like prioritization, you know, what's important to you. And I think you want to live a life by design. That's the best way to put it. You know, I'm not subscribed to the idea of going to work in an office 9 to 5 and then, you know, going home, eating dinner, throwing on Netflix, and then doing that same thing again. That's not a lot of fun to me, right? So I think I can work from anywhere in the world. And what I love about, you know, being an entrepreneur, what I love about working in the century that we work in, is that if you're good at your job, if you take ownership of what you do, I don't have to be in an office. I just have to have maximum results when it comes to execution. It doesn't matter if I'm in Hawaii or Paris or Boston or Seattle. Like, as long as I'm still killing it and crushing it at my job, who cares where I'm at, right? And I think that philosophy allows you to spend more time with your family. Like, do you care if I start work at 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm out by 2? Do you care if I work from 4 a.m. till 10, take a break and come back and grind from 3 till 10 p.m. at night? Like, nobody cares, right? As long as I get the work done. So I think that work-life balance really comes into play when you build a life by design, right? Like, I don't care if I work on Sunday. I don't care if I work till 1 o'clock in the morning on the night. I don't care if I work all night long. It really doesn't matter to me. But what matters is that I can spend time with my family. I can hang out with my kids. I can hang out with my wife. I can invest in that relationship, which is most important to me. And then additionally, what I'm able to do is, you know, go to events and have incredible experiences. And that's what I love. I love running because it's an incredible experience. I love to travel because it's an incredible experience. And I can do that if I have the mindset that I'm living a life by design. And it's not work-life balance to me, it's work-life integration. Like, I'm gonna knock out 60 hours a week. I'm just gonna do it on my time. So that's really how I look at it.
That's amazing. Can you talk a little bit about Evergreen Brands and how you started that? I want to hear a little bit about your entrepreneur journey.
Yeah, that's a great story. It's going to take us back a couple of decades. I'm in a a discipleship program at a local church. And when it ends, the guy who was running the program called Master's Commission called me into his office and he says, "Hey man, I think the best thing for you to do in your life is to, you know, go out and start a business and to buy a house." And literally that afternoon, I drove over to my mom's house, filled out the business license information. She helped me do it. Went up to the Kinko's, printed 1,000 door flyers and said a little prayer. You know, "God, hey, if you want me to be in business, then let's sell some jobs." And I went out and passed out 1,000 door flyers and closed some jobs. And that was really how it started. And within that, we built a portfolio of, you know, quite a few different businesses, you know, from a consulting firm to a permit shop to a national facility management company to franchising to honey production and bee farming, you know, across many different platforms. And that's basically what we've built, everything from real estate investment, you know, all the way across the board. But it started with somebody believing in me and saying, "Hey, I think this is what you should do," and giving me some good direction and looking at my life and just, you know, helping push me in the right direction.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. I love the bee. I'd like to hear more about the bee story. I a while ago, I interviewed this young woman who went on Shark Tank, and she basically, she was 12 or 13 years old, and her business was a lemonade made with honey from bees. And they gave her a couple of million dollars, and it's now at Whole Foods, and was a just fascinating story. What got you into such a sweet business like bees?
Okay, well, bees, I love bees, first of all. And there's several things that got me into this. One, the first thing was I purchased a farm. So I live on a farm. And with that farm, I wasn't into like having livestock and animals. And, you know, people who had been here previously had livestock and animals. And so I'm thinking about it. I'm praying about it. What am I going to do with this piece of property? And I just didn't know. And I'd happened to have a guy who works for me in the nonprofit said, "Hey, I was a beekeeper and this is about bees. And I've always loved bees." And I was like, "This is amazing. We're going to turn this into a bee farm." And I was like, "Let's go buy 100 hives." And he's like, "Well, maybe we don't want to start with 100, but let's get 3. And so we started with 3 beehives, and I loved bees because, one, I love the environment, right? I'm a Native American. This is important to me, living off the land. You know, Puyallup Reservation, you know, is where I'm from. And so, like, taking care of the environment is really, really important. And if we know anything about, you know, bees, you know, 75% of the food that we eat today is what's on our plate. 75% of that is a derivative of pollination. If we don't have pollination, we don't exist. So I love that aspect of it. And then I love the fact that honey is so good for your body. Like, natural, raw, pure grade 8 honey is absolutely incredible for your health. Like, if you have allergies and you take honey, it's going to clear it all up, right? So an amazing health benefit. And then just, we need people to invest in bees. So 90% of the bees in North America today are from backyard beekeepers, right? So without backyard beekeepers, without commercial beekeepers, we don't have any pollination from bees. And so it's like, not only is it really, really important for what we eat and the environment, it's really, really important for our sustainability as human beings. And so I got into bees. I hired a beekeeper. We built a bee farm. You know, last summer we probably had, I don't know, somewhere between 5 and 10 million bees swarming around the fields. When you'd go outside, you'd feel them buzzing by your hair. But it's an amazing thing that we're able to do. We planted hundreds and hundreds of blueberries and trees all over the property. So it's this haven for bees. And then we take those bees and we go pollinate. And we pollinate blueberry fields. And we pollinate pumpkins. And we pollinate almonds down in California. And so it's this really incredible thing that, like, is awesome. And then it's changing our environment. It's good for the world. But here's the kicker to me. Like, I'm a big philanthropist, and I believe life is hard. We could have a whole podcast, each one of us on our own, about the difficulties we've been through in our lives. Mm-hmm. Every single cent of profit goes to charity. Every single cent. There's no profit that goes into my pocket, not $1. Every single piece of it goes to help amazing places, you know, amazing organizations that are, you know, changing the world by helping local, regional, national, international communities.
That's so,
I love that.
I love do that. Too. And it's so beautiful to hear in a world where we don't hear things like that enough. And, you know, it takes me to a quote of yours that you put on LinkedIn recently, which I think is just so true. You said it might take you 10 years to climb to the top of the mountain, but you can slide back to the bottom of the mountain in an afternoon. And, yeah. You know, when I hear you tell the story about bees, first of all, I don't know if I'm amazed at anybody that could be around them and not have tremendous fear, but the fact that, you know, you scale that kind of a business and you know what it's like to be on top, but you're humble enough to realize that you got to treat everybody with the same respect.
It's true. I'm going to be honest. I think I learned that the hard way and I slid down a few times. I had to recline that mountain a couple of times, right?
Yeah. The most successful people that I've ever met have had some of the most successful failures. That's just, you know, that's just the way it is. So talk about growing and scaling a business. What are some of the key steps that you've learned over the years that you think are something repeatable in you know, for our audience, which are, you know, is made up of leaders?
Yeah. You know, man, I think it always comes down to two things, and you probably hear this all the time, but it comes down to knowing your cost of acquisition, I think, first and foremost for me. Like, that's always the most important thing. What does it cost me to buy a client? I have to know that. Like, no matter what business I'm starting, I don't care if I'm looking for pollination contracts in California for bees, or I'm looking to, you know, close a deal with a national retailer, or we've got somebody doing a backyard remodel. Like, I have to understand what it costs me to buy a customer, because when I understand what it costs to buy a customer, I know what I need for infrastructure. I know what I need for production. I know what I need for budgeting, advertising, marketing. That sets the tone for every single thing that I need to have happen. And then number two is right people, right seats. You hear that all the time. But in my philosophy, like so many people, when they're starting a business or they're scaling a business, or even when they're in business, they're thinking to myself, gosh, can I get that person for 100 grand a year? Can I get them for 200 grand a year? Can I get them for 65? And the truth is, if you want A players on your team, it's not only about right people, right seats. It's about having the most incredible talent that you can possibly find, afford, capture, get on your team. Because if we want to win the Super Bowl every single year, we need a team filled of Tom Brady's, right? That's what I need to win the Super Bowl. And at the end of the day, I got to pay for those people. So don't short yourself on what it costs to bring somebody in, because the cost of the lost project, the lost job, the lost initiative will far outweigh that salary. So those are the two things I think are mission critical when you're building and scaling a business.
One of the things I've learned from Mitch actually is return on relationships versus return on investments. I think what you touched on there is that you invest in relationships with good people, and then it turns out to be profitable for you. So that's really nice. Did you have a mentor, Dave, that kind of taught you these things, or how have you learned to become such a good leader?
Okay, you're probably not going to like this, but I am not a believer in mentors.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you the reason why. Because I think that in your heart of hearts, in the leader's heart of heart, I think you know what the decision is. You know what decision you have to make. And I think so often as leaders, what happens is when we put that title mentor there, what happens is we go to somebody and, like, I can call you and say, hey, man, I've got a problem, and I can sell you on the problem, good or bad. Like, you're going to hear my personal, what I want to happen, what I'm trying to get to happen, or what I want you to persuade me against or for. And so I think a lot of times we know. But do we have the guts? Do we have the grit? Do we have the fortitude just to make our own decision, fly our own flag, and get out there what needs to be done? 99% of the time, working with a coach, working with a mentor, they're just reaffirming and giving you permission to do what you need to do. And so, like, I'm a believer in make the decision and go for it. Just do it. I think it's great to connect and build relationship, because I believe in relationships too. And I believe it's like, I want to work with people I like. That's what I've learned. Like, if I like you and we have good relationship, then I want to work with you forever. If I don't, I want to move on as fast as I can, right? Because I think that's really important. So I believe in having great relationships with my peers where I have open relationship, but I want to have those values align. Do my faith values align? Do my monetary values align? Do my business values align? And when those values align, then I'll come to you and ask you for advice, because I know that you're giving advice in a lane that meets the lane that I'm in. And I know that's going to be advice. And then I'll look at that advice and I'll say, how does this affect my decision? Is it good or bad? And then I'll go from there. And so I focus on relationships versus mm-hmm. mentorship, if that makes sense.
That makes total sense.
That makes total sense. I know when you did, when I was on your podcast, we talked a lot about sports. My personal sport was tennis. I know yours is hockey. Yep. You strike me as someone that has a lot of grit. I would yep. love to hear your definition of grit.
Well, let's see. I am a hockey player, and I can tell you that when I was, 15 years old, I was playing junior hockey, which is, practically semi-professional hockey. And in that league, you're either 15 or you're 21, and 21 is when you max out. And I'm at that time young enough where I still have to wear a full cage on my face. And I'm literally, my first shift, there's playing in front of this huge crowd, and some 21-year-old giant grabs me, probably because I have a face mask mm-hmm. on, and just starts wailing on me, right? Just firing the punches back and forth. And I'm literally telling the ref, get in here. I need help. Ref, get in here. Help me. And what I learned was that at that moment, that hurt, broke my nose, right? Bleeding bad. I get my little 5-minute penalty. I go back to the locker room. They put some gauze in my nose and they say, okay, get back out there, keep going. And I can tell you stories about getting stitches across my face and go back out, keep playing, right? And I think that's grit. You learn that. Like, I got a broken nose. I can barely breathe. I just got attacked by this monster. Mm-hmm. That goes with you your whole life, right? Like, you don't get to go in the locker room and be done. You figure out how to breathe through your mouth and you go finish that game. And that's the same in business. We're going to get knocked down. We're going to receive a lawsuit in the mail. We're going to have a key employee quit. We're going to get hit so hard that we don't even know how we move forward, but it comes back to climbing the mountain. Just move a step at a time. Even if it's a quarter step, it's still a step forward. And I think that's what we have to have. And that's one of the things I love about sports is they mm-hmm. teach you that you don't get to quit if you want to perform at a high level.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, I'm a huge hockey fan. Had the opportunity to work with a number of hockey New Jersey Devils players here. And Patrick Elias, Martin Brodeur, just to throw a couple names out there. And I've never met anyone with more grit than those gentlemen. And also the stress of watching hockey and realizing and people in certain positions and just things that can go wrong. And, when I look at your background and I look at what you've written, you always use the term being the Sherpa. And I love that. It's one of my favorite expressions from someone that will never be able to climb Mount Everest, but fascinated by Mount Everest, fascinated by Sherpas, that whole community. Why have you chosen that to describe yourself in your LinkedIn? Because you just mentioned that you don't really need a mentor, but you need a Sherpa. What's the difference there?
Man, for me, I want to say that each one of us have a Mount Everest in our own life. And mm-hmm. we all run into something that's like, how in the world am I going to climb this? This thing is going to kill me, right? I don't care if it's personal, business, sports, whatever. And what I love about the Sherpa is the Sherpas climbed that mountain 40 times. They know where the dangerous spots are. They know where the pot of gold is. They know the right time of year to do it. And in our life, we have needed this time when somebody reaches out their hand and says, I'm here for you. I've got you. And they give you that helping hand up. And I love the picture of the Sherpa that's standing above the man climbing the mountain, and he's holding him, he's pulling him up, and he's saying, let's go. And I think that's what life is about. A rising tide raises all ships. And when you're a Sherpa, it's let me give you my hand. I'm here. I'll help you up. You may not need me for the entire journey. You may not need me forever, but now I can help you. And at that same thing, I'm putting my hand out to the guy who's above me and saying, hey, can you help me? Because in my life, 5 or 10, 20 people have helped me get where I'm at today. And I love and respect those people. And I think that's what it means to be a Sherpa, is I'm here for you when you need it most. I'm here for you when you're down and out. I'm here for you to help you climb the mountain, whatever that mountain is in your life.
Well, that leads me to the next big accomplishment that I know you have recently done, and that is the run of your first marathon. I would love for you to share that journey. I was inspired by it so much that I sent you LinkedIn messages about, hey, you just inspired me to go run 7 miles in the heat here in Dallas.
Yep.
But I would love to hear that. You don't have to go detail by detail, but I would love to hear that journey, how we got started and how you felt when you finished it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, man, it started with breaking my ankle. So I broke my ankle playing hockey with my kids. And that's a bummer since I played it all my life, but it happened. And when that happened, it really set me back, and I gained about 65 pounds in weight. I wasn't moving, and I just couldn't get my ankle back. And a friend of mine asked me, he said, hey, will you run a marathon with me? And I said, sure. And at that time, I'm 335 pounds. And I started training for this marathon. And actually, this coming weekend will be 1 year since I started training. And I ran 3 miles in like 59 minutes or 109 minutes, whatever it was, some crazy, horrible time. And it was this, I have to meet this marathon. I have to meet this marathon. And I trained for, you know, whatever it was, you know, 7-8 months to run this marathon. And I was ready. And I got into the marathon. And as I'm running, the first 4 miles go great. And at mile five, my back locks up. Like, I don't know if you've ever had a cramp in your leg or a cramp in your back or something, but it's just that screaming pain from a cramp. And it just locks my back up all the way down. And I have to start walking at mile four. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we got 22 miles to go. At mile 11, I'm not kidding you, I called my wife on the phone and I said, I'm not going to make it. And I've done this. I ran 27 miles in training. I'm dying here. And she starts, you know, the kids start crying in the background and they say, oh, we love you, daddy. We're here for you. We're praying for you. We hope you're going to make it. Like, we're with you. And I'm running and I get through, you know, mile 12 and they've got this beat the bridge van. And if it passes you, you got to get on this bus and you're out of the marathon. And they pass me. And they say, you got to get on. And I say, no, I'm not getting on. And I run past them. And then I'm just dying, man. I'm in so much pain. And they pass me again. And the lady's shaking her head at me. And she says, get on this bus. And I said, no, I'm not getting on this bus. And there was a guy who was running for some fallen heroes and, you know, Asian guy. And he was right in front of me. And I said, if I can just follow him, if I can just not lose sight of him, I can do it. And before you know it, bam, I'm at mile 16. I'm still going. Bam, I'm at mile 20. I beat the bridge. Bam, I'm at mile 22. How you doing? Outstanding. Bam, mile 24. I can see it. I'm almost there. Mile 26. I get across the finish line. Yes, it's amazing. My coach, John Geigerich, jumps across the finish line, slaps me on the back so hard he almost knocks me over. Then he's like, we did it. We did it. We finished it. And it was amazing to get across that line. It took 6 hours and 34 minutes, but we
doesn't
did
matter.
It.
Doesn't matter. And as someone who's lived in Washington, D.C., and I've watched that marathon, I would imagine that there was this little extra inspiration that comes from when you're running and you see the Jefferson Memorial, or you see Lincoln Memorial, and then you see the Washington Monument, or you pass the Vietnam. Well, you know, all these things, that the Iwo Jima, all those things that are part of that race, I would imagine that just like gives you that, like that extra little push, you know, of inspiration. I mean, to me, just, you know, I've never understood that with the New York Marathon, because you just sort of, all right, you're looking at a bunch of stores and people, but you know, these are just such history around you.
Yeah, man, it's incredible. I'll tell you, the most inspirational and impactful is what they call the Blue Mile. And it's at like mile 12, and it's a full mile of every 2 feet, there's a picture of a fallen hero on wow. either side of you.
Wow.
And it's just like, these are the people who have sacrificed their lives. Mm-hmm. They have died in war for my freedom. And the little pain that I'm going through, right, it feels insurmountable. But mm-hmm. what did they go through? They gave their life for me, and we're running in their honor, and we're running, you know, for them. And so it's like, I got to go. I got to keep pushing. I got to keep pushing. And those things, like you mentioned, they're just huge, right? Being in the nation's capital. Wow. Incredible. You know, where we were founded, where we started, you know, all of those things, they lead to, I can do this. I can push through. And I think a lot of it too is being grateful. Like, I can remember, I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful for the scenery. I'm grateful for the Jefferson Memorial. Like, I'm saying those things to myself right. as I'm running through, and it's giving me the energy to keep pushing.
You know, some people just talk about, you know, whether it's life or business, you know, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. But I mean, you took it to a whole new degree. I mean, you've totally defines, I think, everything that, you know, that has led to your success. The fact that you at, you know, the peak of all your success, you actually said, you know what, I'm actually going to do a marathon. And, you know, who cares how long it took? That doesn't matter at all. The fact that you accomplished it is amazing. And I just, you know, kudos to you, my friend. That is just really something that is truly a legacy. I think, I mean, I have such admiration. You know, one of the things that, we've done in this show at the end is ask a question that I kind of stole from Tim Ferriss, Tribe of Mentors, but it's such a great question. And I think you've probably given 10 answers already, but I bet you've got something else hiding up there. So I'm going to ask you what we call the billboard question. So Dave, you are given this giant billboard for a message for the whole world to see. Okay. What would it be and why?
Huh? That is a great question, man. And I think that if I was giving you a message, it would be simple. I would just put slow down. Right? Like, I think that's my message, because we don't slow down. We go so fast that we miss the important moments. I don't know if you have kids or not, but how fast your kids grow up. Do I wish I would have spent 10 more minutes, you know, playing a video game with him, or was I on that client call? Do I wish when I, you know, went to these amazing places for work that I would have slowed down, enjoyed maybe a coffee shop, maybe some nice scenery? Would I've liked to have taken my spouse with me? Hey, as our parents age, or as loved one age, do I wish I would have made one more Saturday visit to see my dad? Do I wish I would have had one more phone call with my mom? Or was I trying to close that deal that I don't even remember? And I think just slow down, right? Because at the same time, you know, you're still going to get that job. You're still going to close that deal. But if you can enjoy the sweetness of it, if you can enjoy what you've put in, then it makes it all worthwhile. Do you stop to celebrate every win? Because we can have 50 wins in a day, and the one negative is the only thing we're focusing on all day. Did you celebrate every win that you had? Did you celebrate those moments with your dad? Did you celebrate that high school graduation big enough? And I think that's what it's about for me, is just slow down. Take your kids with you on a business trip. Spend an extra few days. Doesn't hurt anything. Life's still going to go on. But those memories that you make are going to impact their life forever. And so I think that's my billboard message.
Wow. That is so amazing. You're just such an inspirational guy. We can't thank you enough, Dave, for your friendship and for carving out time today, on our Leadership Lounge podcast. And, you definitely have motivated me to go run this afternoon. I promise you that.
And amen, brother. I have to tell you, as someone who lost their mother recently, but spent a lot of time with her in her last 15 years. She lived till her mid 90s, and boy, did she live those years. I thought about that all the time. It's like, it's Sunday, I'm watching football and she's home. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go watch the game with her. I mean, she loved her. Huge sports fan, my mom. So, you know, those little things that, you know, you can't get those moments back. And I've asked this question, you know, a couple of hundred times, and I usually don't get very emotional, but you really just, well, knocked that one out of the park, Dave. Thank you so much for being part of Leadership Lounge and spending some time with us today.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for having me, and thank you for sharing about your mom. That's an important, wonderful thing, as my dad is 92 years old, and so those are those moments, man. They just, like, at some point I won't be able to hear his voice. At some point he won't tell me I love me, right? And so I gotta cherish and save those moments, and I think that's what's important to me.
Thank you for joining us on the Leadership Lounge with Mitch Slater and Saman Sami, powered by UBS. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation and gained valuable insights to fuel your own success journey. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and share the episode with anyone looking to grow as a leader. And stay tuned for more exclusive stories and strategies from the world's most inspiring business minds. Until next time, keep leading with purpose.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary, provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.